Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the business stories right after this. Well, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m. While his coffee pot made in Japan is perking, he puts his blow dryer made in Taiwan to work and then shaves with his electric razor made in Hong Kong. He puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan, his designer jeans made in Singapore, and a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. Then after cooking up some breakfast in his new electric skillet made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico how much he can spend today. Then after setting his watch made in Switzerland to the radio made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car made in Germany and goes looking, as he has for many months, for a good paying American job. Then, after the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while, so he puts on a pair of sandals, made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine, made in France, turns on his TV, made in Japan, and ponders why it is that he cannot find a good-paying American job. Well, instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business dealing in property instead of income? Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free. You can call right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the email, or better yet, click on to the archive machine. And you can download that free general law CD package right there off of our website at georgegordon.org on the archives page. Hey, last time I said I'd show you how to save the money, make the money, save the money, and then employ the money to build your own house. Between 1865 and 1900, Americans went through the most productive period in our history. At the close of the Civil War, Americans started migrating to the West. We started building railroads. We opened vines, we took on immigration, and the nation grew by leaps and bounds, both in population and in wealth. We built 286,000 miles of railroad. We built steel mills. We built infrastructure. We built roads and bridges. We mined. We logged. We lumbered. And we prospered. We used hard money, gold and silver, and we used entrepreneurial free enterprise. That was the key to our success. Now, when people become wealthy, they become lazy. And after 1900, the laziness set in. And then we wanted to enjoy the good life, and we did. And from that point on, America went into mediocrity, and then beginning in the 1930s, we got on the slippery slope, and we've been on the downhill side of the slippery slope ever since. So what you see going on around you today is the natural and the inevitable end of all civilizations. All civilizations start out in slavery, then they rise to prosperity. Then they go on to great wealth. Then they go on to indolence. Then they start to deteriorate. And they get on the slippery slope, and then they go back into slavery again over time. Because once they find out that they can vote themselves largesse and they can stop working and live off of somebody else, they will. And that's because of the lust and greed factors from the five motivators of human nature. Now, if you can get hold of these five motivators of human nature, that is your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, you can correct those deficiencies. If you can't, there'll always be somebody out there jerking your chain. Some salesman out there who's selling you the good life, like Barack Obama selling you health care insurance, or Franklin Roosevelt selling you Social Security. And when you get your Social Security, you get your income tax right along with it. Did you notice that? Now, I once worked for an old man. His name was Frank Rocha. And he came to the United States as an immigrant from Portugal. He was from the Azores Islands. At the time, he was the owner of a dairy. He had 140 cows. I think it was 240 acres. And he did quite nicely for himself. He came over here, went to work. He had $5 in his pocket on the day he arrived. That was in 1922, $5. On the day he died, in 1971, he had more than $1 million. $1 million. I thought that was pretty significant for an immigrant to do that. He told me, he said, any Portuguese can come over here from Portugal and make it big, make it easy. He said, but if you Americans went to Portugal where I'm from, you'd starve to death. You couldn't make it there. I was 15 years old, and I thought to myself, well, now why is it that Americans couldn't make it in Portugal, but the Portuguese can make it in America? And that's because when I went to work for Rocha, it was the hardest place in the valley to work. Hardest place. I was told that by Walter Bugnuda. I was walking down the street on my way to interview for the job there at Rocha's, and Bugnuda looked at me, a skinny kid from the city, and he said, you might as well turn around, pack it in, kid. You're never going to make it down at Rocha's. He's still farming with horses. And I thought, still farming with horses? I didn't know what that meant. But I learned later that there was only two dairies in the valley. John Enos and Frank Rocha were the only two guys in the valley still farming with horses. Now today we have the Amish people that still farm with horses, and we laugh at them. Well, they were laughing at Rocha and Enos because they were still farming with horses in 1955. So when I went to work there, I worked there for three years, I discovered that this is the hardest place in the valley to work, and I mastered it. I could work on the hardest place in the valley, the toughest. So when I left there, I could work anywhere. There wasn't any harder place in the valley to work. Life for me has been downhill from that point on. Now, the easiest place in the valley was Bill Trutelli's. If I had gone to work for Bill Trutelli first and broke in there for 3 years and then transferred to Rocha's, I would have never made it. That's why Mexican immigrants can come to the United States. They can live in the poorest of conditions. They can work here for the poorest of wages and send $17 billion a year back to Mexico, which is the second biggest source of revenue in the country. It's their immigrants that are working in the United States. Any Mexican can come to America and make it easy. No American can go to Mexico and make it. Now, that's a commentary. So let's learn a lesson here from this, and let's see now if we can turn the tide. What is it that the immigrant has? What is it that he's doing that gives him success? It's like looking at the Kmart-Walmart model. Evidently, the people at Kmart have never walked into a Walmart store so that they could observe what the Walmart people do to attract the customers that won't go to Kmart because of the bad service and the poor business model that they display. Now, I'm a businessman, and I can tell you, Kmart, if they would emulate Walmart, would be just as successful as Walmart. It isn't the name. It's the business model. Now, what's the business model, then, of success when we want to live the American dream free and clear? Now, I showed you the business model from the Department of Labor and the American dream, the $100,000 a year man living in Hartford, Connecticut, compared with the man living in the countryside, out on the farm, and practicing the Ten Commandment model. So the one guy in Hartford, Connecticut, practices the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto model, and the other guy practices the Ten Commandment model. And which one of these guys is doing better? Kind of like the house model that we gave you an example of. One guy buys a house for $90,000, sells it 30 years later for $10,000, loses $90,000. The other guy buys his house on time and pays 6% interest, and at the end of the 30 years sells it for $250,000. And which one of them made the most money? And they both lost the same amount, $90,000. You didn't gain anything by buying that house on time. You thought you did. You thought you did. You see, you thought you bought it for $50,000 and sold it for $250,000 and made a $200,000 profit. And that isn't an accident. It's designed that way to deceive you into believing that you're free when in reality you're a slave. The 14th Amendment to our federal Constitution does the same thing. The black people of America believe that they have been freed. That's a fiction. What's happened here is the white man who was free has now been reduced to the status of a black who has not been freed, but who actually believes that he has. What he has changed is the title from slave to employee. So if I called you a slave or a bondservant, you'd be offended. If I called you an employee or self-employed, God, you love it. You sit there and you tell me, well, right on, Gordon, keep stroking me. So when I was talking to Frank one day, I asked him, I said, now, how is it that you were able to rise from $5 when you arrived in this country to the owner of this dairy, free and clear, with hundreds of thousands in the bank? I know he had hundreds of thousands because the Nielsen girl working in the bank stole $200,000 out of his account. So I knew he had hundreds of thousands. By the time he died, I don't know if he had millions, but I know he had at least $1 million in 1971 dollars. So he said, okay, here's what I did. I always saved half. When he got to this country, he went to work on a dairy, and he got paid $40 a month. Now, that $40 a month, starting in 1922, was two double eagles. He got paid 2 ounces of gold a month, two $20 double eagles. He kept one of them and spent it, and he saved the other one. And he did that until 1944. In 1944, he had saved $5,000, and he put that down on this farm. And he signed up on a contract to pay interest at the rate of 6% per annum. Then, using his always save half philosophy, he doubled up on his payments. And he paid the note off in 2.5 years instead of 5 years. It was a 5-year note for $30,000 at 6% interest that he paid off in 2.5 years. Now, he would have buried himself in the debt and made himself servant to the bank had he paid it off over 5 years. Because of the rule of 72, he cut that in half and put the profit in his pocket. Now, once he was free and clear, from then on, the payments that he was making, these double payments for 2.5 years, now was profit that he put into his pocket. All right, now, you're going to sit there and say, well, yeah, that's good for a single guy that's working on the ranch, but what about me? You know, I'm a married guy, and I got four kids, and I'm a truck driver, and I'm doing this, that, and another thing over here. Well, let me show you how this works here, Bob. No matter how much money you make, you spend it all. If you go back in your life, you weren't making $50,000 a year, you know, when you were 16 years old. And when you were 18 years old, you were making more than when you were 16. When you were 20, you were making more than when you were 18. By the time you were 25, you were making more than when you were 20. By the time you were 30, you were making more money than you were when you were 25, and so on. I don't care what your age is now. Normally, we continue to grow. If nothing else, just inflation itself ought to be putting more dollars in your pocket. Not more purchasing power, but more dollars. So you're making more dollars today than you've ever made before. And I pointed out to you that in 1945, my granddad worked for $1.75 an hour. Today, it's $17.58, so it's 10 times more. Now, it is true, you're making 10 times more, and you're living about half as well. And that's because $17.58 today is not equal to $1.75 in 1945 purchasing power. And that demonstrates something to us, that the use of paper money over here lends itself to poverty. Now, the average guy would say, well, what else are you going to do? Okay. Well, the fact that you don't know what else to do is your Achilles heel. There is an answer to that riddle, and it's to get off paper and go back to hard money. Get off paper, go back to hard money. If hard money produced the America that was the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, and paper money has depreciated our wealth, then doesn't our common sense tell us what we need to do is to get back to hard money? Now, the other day, you know, looking back here a couple of years, we went into an economic decline. The economic decline was triggered by the housing bubble. The housing bubble was characterized by the debt load that could not be serviced. This had a ripple effect. The ripple effect took down several big banks, like Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. What was the solution to the problem? More debt. Well, boys and girls, come on, now let's wake up and smell the coffee. If debt caused the problem, what in the hell makes you think that more debt's going to solve the problem? I mean, that's like a guy that goes to a whorehouse and gets a dose of clap and then says, well, the solution to this is to go back to the whorehouse. I don't think you're going to find a cure for VD in a whorehouse, do you? What makes you think that you're going to find the cure for debt by going to the bank and taking on more debt? Come on, let's wake up and smell some coffee here, shall we? Now listen, old Frank said, it's very simple. He said, no matter how much you make, you will spend it all. And Frank said, I watched the guys who were working on the ranch, and they got paid the same amount as I did. They got paid $40 a month, and they went out, and they spent twice as much at the whorehouse, and twice as much at the bar, and twice as much for a new automobile, and twice as much. All that this boils down to, when you were a kid, you were driving a 47 Plymouth, and today you're driving a Corvette. I was driving around yesterday, and I saw this bright yellow Corvette, and I said, oh, my God, talk about garish now. How much did that thing cost? Well, I imagine $50,000 or more. Now, a Corvette's a nice car. It's got four wheels, and it takes you from point A to point B. I'm driving a GMC, and my GMC takes me from point A to point B, and the state says I can only drive there at 55 miles an hour. Now, this Corvette will do 160, but he can't drive it 160. First of all, there isn't a road here in this county that you could get up to 160 on. Oh, I don't know, maybe you could make 160 coming down across Spring Creek, but, you know, what, for half a mile? You know, you need a Corvette here, you know, like you need a neck, another thumb in the web of your left hand. It's like trying to, you know, it's like trying to win a race, you know, with a Corvette racing from San Diego to La Paz. You know, what you need is a four-wheel drive pickup. So he said, well, the other guys are down here spending twice as much and living it up. He said, I just pulled in my horns and saved half of it. I went to the bar. I went to the whorehouse. I went everywhere that everybody else did, but I spent half as much. You know, while the rest of the guys are buying drinks for the house, I bought drinks for me. While the rest of the guys are over here buying a case of beer, you know, I bought a six-pack. Now, I saved one half. That gave me the investment capital that I needed. So let me try this out. You got three big expenses over here. Now, let's assume, for the sake of our discussion here, that you're the median average American. Half the people of America make more than $50,000 a year, and half the people of America make less than $50,000 a year. So let me start off by talking to you people that make $50,000 or more, shall I? Then we'll come back to you people that make $50,000 or less. And I'll show you how to do the same thing. It isn't how much money you make. It's how you use it. You people out there have the same amount of time in a day that I do. Frank Rocha didn't have 32 hours a day. He only had 24, just like you and me and everybody else. Bill Gates, $37 billion. That boy only had 24 hours in a day. We all had the same 24 hours, but he did something different with his time than you and I did. And it paid off for him. Now, the problem with these rich people is, you know, when we try to compare ourselves to these rich people, it just generates jealousy. And that's a negative emotion. That's a negative for what we want to accomplish. Remember, vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear is what motivates us. Sitting here grousing about Bill Gates and his $37 billion, and let's take it away from him and institute medical care for everybody, Medicare, or what was that thing called? This health insurance, socialized medicine. Oh, no. Bill Gates isn't going to be paying anything toward your socialized medicine here, Bob. You're going to pay all of it in spades and the interest on top of it. And that's a fool's errand. To believe that you're going to make get rich over here practicing socialized medicine and social security and income tax. Let me show you what. Right now, if you're making $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 per year on social security and $8,500 a year in income tax. That takes one third of everything you create and produce. That's $16,150. Your next biggest expense is your house or your rent. And if you're on average here, you're spending about $1,200 a month on rent, which is $14,400 a year and takes 28.8% of what you're making. Your third biggest expense over here is your automobile. It takes $8,250 a year and that's 16.5%. Add those up, and you're spending $38,800 a year. You've only got $11,000 left over to feed yourself and pay your credit card debt and the rest of it. So if you're making $50,000 a year, you're living it up, and you're spending the whole $50,000. But can you remember back when you were only making $25,000? Can you remember back when you were only making $12,500? It doesn't make any difference how much money you're making. You're spending it all. But, hey, on the other side of the coin, do you know that there's people out there living on half of what you're making? So Frank said, here's the secret to the success. It's cut your living standards down to one half of what you're making. That's the way you do that. Now, most of you people have credit cards, and you're already buried in debt. That's the first problem we have when people walk into the classroom here in our business school and say, okay, guys, you're already buried in debt. Now, I'm going to start off here. If you're not buried in debt, you're at zero COD. You're making $50,000 a year, but you're spending your money, $16,000 on taxes, $14,000 on rent and $8,000 on the automobile. What we need to do is we need to cut these out, okay? Because we got to have a little investment capital. Now, in order for us to build this $50,000 house, we have to have $12,500. If we want to build a $100,000 house, then we have to have $25,000. And we have to have it in cash. Now, we don't have to have it all today in a pile to start construction. As I showed you, the electrician, Henry Moore, was working on his job, and he took a certain portion of his pay, and he, you know, $500 a month, that's $6,000 a year, $6, $12, $18, $18,000 a year. Can you budget $500 a month for your house project? Where are we going to get this $500 a month? Well, I told you about Bob Hallstrom. He took it out of his retirement pay. His wife is working. The two of them now don't have any children. If you're married and you got four kids and you're buried in debt up to your eyeballs, first thing we got to do is to get you out of debt. Most of you people are saying, well, what I got to have is more money. No, you don't. You can't manage the money you got. That's why you're in debt. Now, let's pause here for a moment and let's think about this. If you're in debt, got four kids, you're paying on a mortgage, a car, you got credit card debt, and you're buried up to your eyeballs, son, it wouldn't make any difference if we gave you $1 million. Like the prodigal son, you'd squander it all. You don't know how to manage your money. So he who is faithful in least will be faithful in much. The first thing we got to do is teach you how to manage what you got. The guy that can manage $12,500 can manage $25,000. The guy that can manage $25,000 can manage $50,000. The guy that's got $50,000 and he's buried in debt obviously can't manage the $50,000. Hell, he can't manage $25,000. He can't manage $12,500. If he could have, he wouldn't be in debt $50,000. Always reminds me of voting. You know, what these people are telling us is that we need to get out here and vote. And if we get out here and vote, we'll vote all the bad people out and vote the good people in. Well, if that's the truth, well, then how in the hell did these bad people get voted in? Somebody had to vote these bad people in. So if voting puts the bad people in, then obviously voting isn't going to take the bad people out, because you couldn't identify the bad people or you wouldn't have voted them in to start with. Would you? I mean, did you go down to the polls and say, here's the good guy and the bad guy, so I'm going to vote for the bad guy? Huh? Well, same thing works here with money. If you could manage the money that you got, you wouldn't be in debt. Okay, no, I'm not in debt. I can manage my money. That's why I don't have any bank accounts. What do I need a bank account for? A bank account is for people that can't manage their own money. They can't manage their wealth. They need a guardian. That's what bankers are there for. They're guardians for people that can't manage money. Now, the first thing we got to do is we got to cut our expenses. Now, every dollar's worth of expense that you cut goes right straight to your bottom line. So we want to fatten our bottom line. So the first thing we do, the first and the most obvious thing that we do, is we need to move closer to our work. The idea that you should live out here in the suburbs and commute to work with this automobile over here is preposterous. It's obvious that if you're in debt, paying for this house on time, you can't afford to live in the suburbs. You haven't gotten to the point where you can afford the American dream yet. So what your opponents are doing over here, they're selling you the American dream on time. No, that ain't going to fly. All that's going to do is impoverish you. It's going to put you into slavery. Credit, debt, slavery. A little different than physical slavery. See, you black people, you were in physical slavery. Now all you've done is they moved you from physical slavery to credit debt slavery. They still got you. All I did was bring the white people in with you. Everybody bought into the same bowl of lentil soup, same bowl of pottage that Jacob sold to Esau. All right, so let's get rid of that car. Got that? Get rid of the car. And at the same time, we're going to do ourselves a big favor. You see, this $14,400, this $1,200 that you're spending over here on this on this house that you can't afford, don't need, shouldn't have, and ought to get rid of. Because as soon as we move closer to our job and we don't need the car, then we also don't need the house in the suburbs, so we can get rid of both of those. And once we get rid of that $8,250 and that $14,400, now we got to live someplace. I'll deny that. But we don't have to live at $1,200 a month. There's other people that are out there living at $600 a month, or $800 a month, or $1,000 a month. And you're going to say, yeah, but I don't want to live in that neighborhood. Well, it's too bad, Bob. You know, it's time to grow up. You can't afford to live in the neighborhood that you're in. That's why you're in debt and buried. And all that's going to happen here is in the final analysis, they're going to come out and take this house and car away from you anyway. You're making car payments, aren't you? You're making house payments, aren't you? As soon as you lose your job, as soon as something goes haywire and you can't make the payments, they're just going to take it away from you anyway. And you're going to be ending up moving into those cheaper digs and walking to work or taking the bus anyway. So you might as well wake up and do it in advance so that you're in control of the events rather than the events being in control of you. When we get rid of the automobile, and this is where my granddad shined. You know, my granddad in 1947 had an automobile. My Uncle Carol wrecked it. And my granddad said, well, I'm not going to buy another car because the kids will just borrow them and go out and wreck them. So he was about, maybe a mile from work. So he bought a house on Lenore Avenue in Willits, California, so that he would be four blocks from his job. And he walked. And when we wanted to go to buy our dairy stuff, the dairy was right behind us. And then when we wanted to go uptown to shop, my grandmother had a little cart that she pulled behind her. And she'd pull that little cart. I don't know, a little basket thing on wheels. And she'd just walk uptown, be about a mile. She'd walk uptown a mile, buy her groceries, and stick it in the little cart and drag it back home. They never had a car. What the hell do you need a car for? Now, I know it's the American dream, and when we get back on our feet, we're going to go out and buy a Lamborghini, but we're not ready for that yet. Remember? We're still in the building stages like a Bill Gates. When Bill Gates got started, you know, he didn't have $37 billion. He had to start out at zero, and then he built on it. But he built on it geometrically. It's 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. And when we come back after the break here, we're going to take a look at this 1, 2, 4, 8 geometric progression. Hang on. We'll be right back. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Go on to the archives page. You can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about how we're going to get ourselves out of debt. And one of the ways to get out of debt is to start by managing our money a little smarter. And we want to aim at saving half. So we want to cut our $50,000 a year income, and we're going to cut our expenses in half. And every dollar that we cut off of our expenses, we can move that right straight to our bottom line. Now, our objective is to save a little stash of cash. So I want to build a $50,000 house first, and I'm going to do that by saving $12,500, and I'm going to build this house over a period of 3 years. I need to buy a lot someplace, and then I need to go to work on my house, and then I need to work on this house at the same time I'm working on my job. I need to save some money, and then I need to put this money to work so that I can build the house and eliminate this $14,400. Because as soon as I get my house built and I own it free and clear, this $14,400 that I'm now paying on rent or making in-house payments goes right to my bottom line, and I can be saving that amount of money every year toward building my next house. Now think about this. If I could save this $14,400, if I was living in my house and I had this house free and clear, I could build my second house with the rent savings that I make in just 2 years. 14 is 28. All right, now how am I going to save this $14,400? Well, let's try this. Have you thought about managing an apartment house? This is the way I got my start, managing the Alameda apartments. In fact, it's one of the better ways to do this. Now, you girls out there, you ought not to marry somebody that doesn't have his house bought and paid for free and clear. Don't even think about it. See, you go out here and you marry this real groovy guy who's flat ass broke, who's struggling to get by to start with, and then you saddle yourself with three kids in the first 3 or 4 years, bury yourself in debt and the good life, then you never see the light of day from that point on, living the American dream on time. And then like as not, when there's a downturn in the economy like you're seeing right now, you lose what little bit that you've got. So let's wake up here. Now, you're already buried, so let's think about getting out of. Many people now, because they're forced to, are going back and living at home. All right? That's a good point. You go back and pay Dad some room and board and get off that $14,000 a year. Get rid of that car, period. A car is as useless as tits on a boar hog. I know it's fun. I mean, hell, I used to fly airplanes. Airplanes are fun, but there's no money in them. So let's wait until we've got some money. Bill Gates can afford a Lamborghini. You can't. So let's get rid of our car because we're getting ahead of the power curve. And when you get rid of that car, you're going to put $8,200 in your pocket because it costs 55 cents a mile. You know those insurance premiums you're paying? I hear this all the time. This lady says, I got to have my car in order to get to work. Hey, hang on a minute. There was work out there before there were cars. I know what you're used to. I know what your schedule is. I know how this is the way I'm doing everything today. That's my point. What you're doing today is impoverishing you. You can't afford what you've got. So obviously what you're doing isn't working. You need to make some changes. So you're living 50 miles from your job. I got to have my car in order to get to work. Let's start thinking about changing jobs. Let's thinking about moving closer to the job that we've got. Now, wherever you're working right now, I don't care where it is, when you come out of the plant, when you come out of the office, start looking around. Are there any apartments or houses around that neighborhood? Well, I wouldn't live in that neighborhood. Oh, yeah, you would. There are other people living in that neighborhood. And they're not spending $14,000 on their living expenses, on their apartment. They're spending $7,000 on theirs. And that $7,000 over a period of 4 years, $7,000 of and by itself in 4 years would give you the $28,000 that you're going to need to build this $100,000 house, Bob. Hell, in 2 years, if you could save $7,000 a year, it would give you the $12,500 that you need to build the $50,000 house. Now, can you tough it out for 2 years? I had a guy one time, he'd tell you a little story here. I was speaking in a speaking engagement over in Oklahoma City, and this guy came out here in a pretty spiffy car. It was an Oldsmobile station wagon. Well, it wasn't a Woody, you know, but it was a, you know, station wagon kind of car. It was an Oldsmobile, and it was about 2 or 3 years old. This is about 86 or 87. This is an 83 Olds, and so he said, well, I got to pull off the freeway here. I got to stop by my house and pick up a couple things. Just take a minute. Pulls off the freeway, parks the car, gets out. He walks down to the corner and turns to the right. Normal people, when they're gonna go home, they pull up in front of the house, and they get out of the car, turn right across the front of the car, and walk into the house. This guy, he goes down to the corner and turns right. And I looked at the wife, and I said, well, that's kind of peculiar. And so she said, yeah, that is kind of strange. The old guy comes back in a few minutes, gets in the car, drives down the road. He's going down the freeway, and he says, I suppose you're wondering why I got out of the car and walked around the corner. He says, well, the reason I did that was because I'm 2 months behind on the payments, and I'm afraid they're going to repossess the car at any moment. And if they do that, well, then you might be sitting in it at the same time, and I wouldn't get you to your speaking engagement, and I'd fail in my mission, and that'd be kind of bad. So he says, I'm kind of watching that. So I said to the young fellow, I said, well, how much did this car cost? And he said, well, it cost me $7,000. And I said, well, how come you bought this $7,000 car? And he said, well, my car had a 67 Chevelle. He said it got too small. And it was old. And I got five kids. And so we needed a bigger car. And I said, son, these five kids, you know, when you got married, you had this 67 Chevelle, and you and your wife fit in it quite nicely. And then over time, you got these five bread snappers came along, and they started taking up more and more room. And I said, did these five children come on you suddenly overnight and overwhelmed you, or did they come one at a time over a period of time? He said, he laughed. You know, he said, well, no, they came over time. I said, well, did you plan ahead as you had the first kid? Did it occur to you that this car was getting smaller and the second kid, and then it's getting smaller and the third kid, and the car's getting smaller and the fourth kid's getting smaller and so on? And then did you start preparing for a bigger car over time? And he said, no, he didn't do that. Never thought of that. So what had happened now is he was working for his dad. His dad's a contractor, and finally, you know, this kid's going to be the last guy left off, and so his business is getting poorer and poorer. He finally has to lay his kid off. So now the kid's been out of work for a couple, 3 months. He's missed some payments here on his car, and he's about ready to have it repossessed. I said, how many payments have you made on it? And he said, 16. So he's made 16 payments of how much? $350 a month. So he's paid $350 a month for 16 months. Listen to this. 350 times 16. He's already paid $5,600 on this car. Remember, this is a $7,000 car. He's paid $5,600 for it over a period of 16 months. Let me ask you this, boys and girls. If you walked into a car lot and you saw a car over here that said $7,000 across it, and you walk up to the guy and you say, "Here, let me show you what I got. I got 56 of these." And you peel off 56 of these $100 bills, and then ask the guy, "Would you take these 56 $100 bills for that $7,000 car?" And the guy will say, "Well, no, I probably wouldn't." Take your $5,600 bills, stick them back in your pocket, and say, "Well, I guess I'll have to go find somebody that will." And then turn your back on this guy and watch what happens next. If you get off that used car lot with the 56 bills in your pocket, if I was the owner, I'd can that salesman. I don't think that you could get off that lot with that $5,600. I think he'd knock you down, take it away from you. Now, even if he didn't, the difference between 56 and 7,000, you know, we're only talking about another 3 months, aren't we? Another 90 days, and you'd have the full cash value. My point is, remember our rule here. If something is priced at 7,000, what did the guy pay for that? And the answer is 3,500. He's got a full Keystone markup on it. Now, for the point of our story here, I asked this kid, I said, "Now listen, you're paying $350 a month, so obviously you were making those $350 payments while you were working. And while you were working, you had $350 a month. Had you planned ahead for 90 days, just 90 days, you could have saved $1,050 and gone down and bought a station wagon, which would have been big enough, and then you would have your Chevelle, and then you would have the $1,000 station wagon. You'd have two cars. Then you would have made 13 payments. If you took those 13 payments times 350, was $4,550. If you had gone down to the auto auction, which is what that dealer did, and paid cash, you would have bought that same car for $3,500, and you'd have $1,000 left in your pocket. Wouldn't you? Then you would have this $7,000 car for $3,500 that you bought at the auto auction. You'd have the second station wagon for $1,000 that you saved for 3 months in the interim, and you still have your Chevy Chevelle. You'd have three cars for the same $5,600, wouldn't you? Over the same amount of time. You didn't have to wait a day. Now, as the game played out, they came and repossessed the car. He gets the worst of both worlds. You see, he signed a contract for $350 a month for 36 months. So that's times 36. He's got a contract for $12,600. He paid $5,600. Remember? So if you get $12,600 and you pay $5,600, you get a $7,000 deficiency judgment. Now look, he doesn't have his 56 Chevelle because that's what he paid down on the car. He doesn't have the $1,000 station wagon because he didn't think ahead. Now he doesn't have his $7,000 station wagon because it's been repossessed. And now he owes $7,000. So now he's on foot and he owes $7,000, which is the amount that he paid for the car on day one. Hey, isn't this usury and interest great stuff? The guy could have had three cars free and clear, including the $7,000 station wagon, if he'd have known how to manage his money. He didn't know how to manage his money. Now, this guy would say to you, "Well, the reason that I'm in trouble is because I lost my job." Or, "It's the reason I'm in trouble is because my stingy boss doesn't pay me enough money." It's because I'm an American, I've been dumbed down in the public schools, and I don't know how to count, so therefore I don't know how to manage my money, and what money I've got's in the bank, and which demonstrates that I'm a ward, unable to manage my affairs, and I got a guardian. Now, if you're one of those that would like to grow up, let me see if I can help you do that. Now, do you remember our rule of 72? That debt that you have on your credit card is doubling every so many years. So you don't have to be real smart to figure out we got to get out from under this debt. Now, either you're going to pay it off or you're going to bankrupt out of it. You know. Now, bankruptcy ain't near as easy as it used to be. It used to be a lot easier. And working for wages is not where the money's at. So entrepreneurial invention is the place where the money's at. It's buying, selling, and trading. I mean, that's where it's at. So if you want to learn how to do that, we teach that in our business school. Let me tell you a little story here about 32 nails in a horseshoe and geometric progression. Let's suppose we do this. I'm going to offer you a deal here. Just like we've got player A and player B here. All right, on player A, I'm going to offer you $25 an hour. I'm going to hire you for 32 years. I'm going to sign a contract, 32-year contract, $25 an hour, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, for the next 32 years. And that's offer number one. Offer number two, I'm going to offer you 1 penny per year for the first year. You're going to work 2,000 hours a year, and you're going to get paid 1 penny for the year 2010. In the year 2011, I'm going to pay you 2 pennies. 2 pennies. In the year 2012, I'm going to pay you 4 pennies. In the year 2013, I'm going to pay you 8 pennies. And I'm going to keep doubling that for 32 years. Which program do you want to sign up for? Now, this is a complex business problem. There isn't one guy in 1,000. Yeah, but maybe you might find one guy in 1,000 that could put two and two together and work this equation out. So I'm going to give you your homework assignment here and show you how this geometric progression works and why it is that we want to get off of jobs, 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 and get on to property, property, property. Because the Ten Commandment model works by geometric progression. And the jobs, jobs, jobs program calls for arithmetic progression. Now take that 1 penny, and what you do is you take a yellow pad. Can you do that? Take a yellow pad. And then you start up here and you go down the left-hand column, and there's 29 lines on my pad here, 29 lines. If you'll move up into the heading section, you can get 30. Can't quite get 32 because there's only 31 lines on the page, and we need 32. But if you'll move up one, you can get 30 on the margin. Come down the margin on each line. Go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Can you do that? Go all the way down here to the bottom, and you'll end up with 29. Then go over here to about two-thirds over across the page, and then put number 31 and then 32. Can you do that? Now it gives you 32 lines. Now, if you've got a calculator, it works better with a calculator. And with my little, this is about the limit to my computer expertise here. I can run my little Sharp 11, EL1197G3. Here's what you do. You put 1 up here. So year 1, and we've got 1 penny. And so you go 1 times 2, and then just hit the times button again, and you'll get 2. See? So the second year you put 2. And then you go hit the 2, and then hit, and it'll come up 4 for you. So the third year is 4. And then you come over here and you hit 4 and the times, and that'll come up to 1, 2, 4, 8, and it'll come up 8.
And then the next times comes up 16, and then the next one comes up 32. And what you're going to do is just times 2, times 2, times 2, times 2. So you've got this original number in here, like 16. You know, when you got 16 in here, and you hit times 2, and then you hit the times button, it hits 32. Don't hit the equal button now, because that stops you, and then you got to hit times 2 again. But on my machine, you just go times 2, times 2, times 2, times 2. Now, once you get the rhythm up here, it comes out pretty fast. And then by the time you get over here to number 32, it'll be $40 million. 32 equals 40 million. Can you say million, boys and girls? All right. Now, remember, the objective here in private business is to double our capital every year. Double. Not add to it 5% a year compounded for 40 years. I want to make double. I want to take a pocket knife worth $3, sell it for $6. I want to take my $6 and go out and buy a bag of something and sell that for $12. I want to take that out and sell that for $24, and so on up the line. Here's a little deal for you. My boy was on the internet a couple, 3 years ago now, but and he just kind of dinking around a little bit, and he says, well, look at this. Here's a little town over here in southeastern Kansas, which isn't too far from us. Probably over here, you know, 150 miles. I'm about the middle of Missouri down here at the Arkansas border. Well, if you were to go over here to Joplin, you know, 150 miles maybe, go a little bit further than that and into Kansas, and there's this little town over there, and they got 6 police cars over there. They were 2002 Crown Victorias. And at the time, the bid on them was $1,600. Now, here's the trick. See, whoever buys this has to buy all 6 of them. The city here is unloading their old police cars, and they're up for public auction, public bid. You can't come in there and buy one car. Well, then that kind of limits that to the Ford dealer, doesn't it? So the Ford dealer finally bid $2,600 each. So he's going to buy all 6 of these for $26. Now, here's the kicker. The wholesale on these cars is $11,500. And I imagine that the retail on these cars must be around $18,000, maybe more. If I gave you this used police car for $2,600, well, better yet, why don't you buy this used police car for $2,600? Could you sell that car for $5,200? Do you think just out there in the marketplace where three-year-old cars, now these cars were 3 years old, so this is about 2005, and they're 2002 Crown Vics for $2,600 each. Now you can rest assured that the Ford dealer bought them for $2,600, took them in, detailed them out, and he probably put $1,000 in them, you know, policing them up, getting them scoped out. Now he's in them $3,600. And he puts them out there on the lot for $18,000. Then he sells those cars for $18,000 a piece. Now that's what you people are buying. You people go out there in the marketplace and you sign up to pay $18,000 at 14% interest so you can pay these payments and interest over there so that this car is going to cost you about $36,000. You're going to go out here and buy a $2,600 car and pay $36,000 for it. You see why you're poor? You see why you can't manage your money? You need to be out there in the marketplace, Bob, buying the car for $2,600, not $36,000. Now, when you get down to that point, maybe we're at the point where we can afford to have an automobile. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, around the world, in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs.